The Touching the Trail Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Touching the Trail Podcast, our weekly ritual of peace, presence, and perseverance. This week's episode is episode 170. And before I jump into what I'm going to be talking about today, I just want to take care of a little business. Now, there are two ways that you can support Touching the Trail. The first is that you can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. And the second way that you can support Touching the Trail is that you can go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. Now, these are functional, affordable, unique, and handmade, handheld deep tissue massage tools. Now, I want you to place yourself in a time, 5 million years ago, when the Earth had been cooling for a few million years by then, towards ice ages. In a time of Earth's history, referred to as the Miocene, where apes first evolved, and on a continent on the other side of the world from me here in California, early human ancestors were developing. If you were to be transported to this time, you would recognize many things, mammals and birds generally, more specifically whales, kelp forests, crows, and growing grasslands. While our ancestors were evolving in Africa, and the earth was slowly cooling, here in what is now California, sediment was being piled up, bit by bit, on the ocean floor. Near the end of the Miocene, the Santa Ynez Fault, which is still considered active today, pushed this sedimentary rock upwards to form what is now the Santa Ynez Mountains. The relatively young age of this mountain range makes it to be extremely steep and rugged, and so, a week and a half ago, 5 million years after the end of the Miocene, I had the pleasure of running 35 miles in those brutal mountains above Santa Barbara, which I mentioned in last week's podcast, but today I want to explore what the Santa Barbara Nine Trails 35-mile endurance run is and what it meant to me. Beyond the jumbled, often jagged rocks that were thrown up by tectonic activity, which makes for a particularly challenging course, the mountains are covered in dense chaparral and coastal sage shrub, populated by flora such as oaks, sagebrush, sage, sumacs, buckwheat, and manzanitas. While the purples, pinks, yellows, reds, greens, and browns make for these mountains to be a sight to see, especially in spring, when these plants' roots and branches reach into and onto the trail, it makes for a whole other level of difficulty on the course. Thankfully, these mountains have a Mediterranean climate, meaning that they and the surrounding area of Santa Barbara have warm, dry summers and wet, rainy winters. At the race, we were blessed with the wet, rainy side of the climate scheme, with my entire day on the course being characterized by fog, a chilly wind, and even thick mist. The staging of this race was in question this year because of the fires and rain that deeply damaged much of the land in the mountains above Santa Barbara last year. Thankfully, the trail organizations and the U.S. Forest Service put in a lot of work to bring these trails back to life and to make them safe again. We were able to run the entire traditional Nine Trails route. The route begins at the Jesuita Trailhead, located near the Santa Barbara Mission, founded in 1786, and runs all the way over to the Romero Canyon Trailhead above Summerland, which is down the coast from Santa Barbara. It is an out-and-back race that covers, you guessed it, nine trails in the mountains there, over 17 miles. And then you go back, and that totals the 35-mile course of the race. The basic topography of the course is that it traces the draws and spurs of the ocean-facing side of the Santa Ynez Mountains. Draws and topography are the areas that pull into the mountain, canyons for example, and spurs are the areas that pull out, ridges for example. Due to the jagged nature of the mountains there is practically no substantial flat area of the course. You are either moving uphill or downhill, often at very steep angles. Over the course's 35 miles, it covers a total of almost 11,700 feet of elevation gain, which means that it also covers a total of almost 11,700 feet of elevation loss. So there's a lot of ascent and descent, to say the least. For me, the race started in the dark. And well, as it did for every other racer out there, we started at 6 in the morning, which isn't all that early for most races, but it was still dark in Santa Barbara at this time of year. Me and the other like 300 racers was a big field this year, and I think due in part because the race was canceled last year due to the fires and the storms. And so a lot of people showed up for this year's race, including some solid ultra runners. The Coconino Cowboys, almost all of them showed up, including Jim Walmsley. Jesse Haynes towed the start line, Nicodemus Holland, he's a past podcast guest, and many other stout ultra runners. Jim Walmsley went on to win the race and break the record, along with second place and third place, all breaking the record, the standing record that was standing before this year's race. For me going into the race, it was not to go fast, it was not to try to show off, and it was not even to try to prove myself to anybody else or anything like that. It was nothing exterior for me in my outlook approaching nine trails this year. For me, my mantra was slow and steady. I power hiked practically every single uphill of this race, even in the opening miles, even in those first flattish like mile and a half that starts the race, 2 miles, I walked a lot, power hiked a lot. But that allowed my legs and my energy to last the race. My mindset was key for me at this race, mainly because it was I knew that going into this race that I would either finish the race or DNF the race based solely on my outlook of how I would approach my run that day, which was now a week and a half ago. And I'm happy to say now that I'm, you know, done with the race and passed it by a week and a half, that my mindset was solid for the entire time. I enjoyed the beauty out there, looking at the ocean, looking at the beautiful flora out there, and enjoying the company of those around me. But largely, I was alone for most of the race, just solitary, behind me and in front of me, just alone. And that is pretty much how I wanted it. I didn't want it to be a crowded field or anything like that where I would always be with somebody. I kind of wanted to spend my time alone out there in the mountains above Santa Barbara, and that is exactly what I got. I'm thankful for that. I didn't even put a headphone in until the second half of the race. I really just focused on forming and building and forging even a mindset, especially in those first, you know, 5-10 miles, that was focused on just being present, being there with anything that comes, whether that's pain or joy or something in between or something, a combination of both, and working with it and learning from it as I progressed along that course. I didn't really bring nutrition with me. I did wear a vest, but I didn't bring anything major with me in it. I relied mainly on the aid station tables, of which there were 3 fully stocked locations. But remember, it's an out and back race, so one of the locations at Romero Canyon, which is the turnaround, you hit once, but the other 2 aid stations you hit twice. But these aid stations were extremely well stocked. They had a good variety of food and snacks to pull from, the classics like a PB&J, sandwich triangles and chips and candy. But they had just a good variety of things. They also had some incredible like date bars that almost tasted like a 7-layer bar, almost tasted like they had caramel or something. But they sliced those into little strips, and I would just eat as many of those as I could if the aid station had it. I fell in love with those. They were super tasty. At the turnaround, I had some pieces of a Payday candy bar. But as I was chewing through it, they're so like dense and chewy and firm that I almost wasted more energy chewing on the bars than I did get from them from eating them. It was like an exercise for my mouth. It was weird. But as I made my way along the course, outwards, especially, I really chatted, you know, just with people that I knew and met new ones as well, and just spent my time being present, like I was saying, with the course and with the people there and with my experience there. On the way back, of course, it got, you know, more painful, more discomfort, more into the pain cave for me, as it does, you know, as you progress through a race, that's typically how it goes. So my chit chat lessened and lessened and eventually stopped. I don't think I, you know, chatted with anybody come the last, you know, quarter of the race. But it was still nice, especially in that first half, like I said, to really just be there with old friends and new friends and just hang out and have a good time. And that's really what my outlook for this race comes down to. I wasn't even nervous practically at all the night before or the days leading up to it, because I had such a solid mindset going in. And that I was only able to build that through the work of training and of visualization of what this race would mean for me. And really the mindset was one of hanging out, of just having fun and seeing what happens. It was not about trying to show off. It was not about trying to prove anything. It was not about trying to set some record or PR, or it was not about time. It was not about pace. It was not about anything like that. It was simply about getting out into the mountains, taking it slow and steady, and having some fun. And I did just that. And that's, I think, why I was able to feel so good for so much of the race and finish it so successfully. By the time I crossed that finish line, I was still filled with energy in a very positive, excited way. And I was overjoyed to have completed the race. I was definitely in the very, very back of the pack at this race. So I was passed by the entire field practically as they headed back while I was still heading out. But it was awesome to see the super fast guys just fly by me, especially on the downhills. And then, you know, high five or wish good luck to all the other people in the race as they passed me. And again, just want to reiterate how technical and steep these trails are. They are in state, especially this year, with how much they have been, I mean, it's a harsh word, but even destroyed, honestly, by the rains and the storms that have torn through Santa Barbara in the last year and a half, especially, you know, multiplied in their negative effect by the fires and the damage they wrought about a year and a half ago as well. So it really has been a process for the people here or there in Santa Barbara who take care of those trails to bring them back to life. And I am grateful that they did, because then I was able to run this race and everybody else was as well. But still, being out there, especially on like the Edison fire roads, Edison, like the power company, their fire roads that they use to service their power lines, they were just mangled, is the best word for it. I think there was big boulders and just rocks strewn everywhere along those fire roads, especially at, like, you know, the entry and exit points of like little canyons, and you might as well call them tributaries, kind of, I guess you can say, that run down the mountains there. And when they intersect with the fire roads, it was just like a pile of rocks that were there, that were just like left there by the power of water. I mean, it was really a good exercise in understanding the power of water compared to things that seem almost unmovable, like massive boulders. But in reality, they are definitely movable. It just takes a big force like water to push them. If you looked up into the mountains, all of the little crevices and canyons that lined the mountains were filled with just sheets of gray, which were just the rocks, because all of the dirt and vegetation over them had been washed away and all the rocks had been pulled down and away from the storms. It was really a sight to see, and it was not at all what I was expecting. Thankfully, the single track was probably the best situation out there. It was not really that damaged or anything too outrageous. There was some overgrowth from the plants in the early and last part of the race, but that, you know, is manageable. But, you know, when you're tired, it can get to you, and it did get to me, and getting really annoyed with the, you know, oaks and other branches reaching out to me and tugging on my hair and on my clothes, and pretty seemingly like they were arms holding me back from ascending the climb there that I was on at that point of the race near the end. But that's all par for the course out there. And what really did impact me was, you know, I've ran out in Santa Barbara many, many times, especially in all those trails that I ran in the race at Nine Trails. But at the very bottoms of those canyons there that we traversed, where the creeks run through, typically, you know, most years when I've run there before, they're just, you know, pretty sharp canyons that have been formed over the years from these creeks. And you can kind of cross that flattish bottom part to the other side, to the uphill side, relatively quickly, because they're not that big of an expanse, because they're, you know, like steep-sided mountain canyons. They're not like broad, you know, river valleys. But because of the impact of these storms, it for all intents and purposes, in my mind, turned these canyons into seemingly broad river valleys. You would get to the bottom of these canyons, and instead of, you know, a sharp, sharp-tipped or sharp-bottomed, creek canyon that you would expect in the mountains of Santa Barbara, you get to the bottom, and it's a big expanse of rocks and trees strewn everywhere that you have to traverse slowly and make your way kind of down and across to the creek and then up and across back to the trail. It wasn't, miles and miles wide, obviously, or even, hundreds or thousands of feet wide, but it was much larger and wider than I had expected or had seen before in those canyons. The storms and the power of that water really did pull away a lot of the vegetation and of the land there to expose a much wider kind of surface area that you would have to traverse at the bottom of those canyons. And that was definitely shocking, definitely illustrated to me the impact that these fires first had on the mountains there, and then that the storms then had on those mountains there. It was definitely kind of a race of realizations, both like environmental of what, the fires and the storms could do to a place, and also, of course, physical of what I was able to do and my emotional, mental state and physical state as I progressed through that race. It really did kind of recontextualize as I went along and played an important role. Especially that environmental aspect in my ability to do the race, of that, that idea of impermanence, of seeing something that, at first, a few years ago, I thought was so solid and sure, that isn't, that it's a boulder that can be moved. And just like any pain that I might be feeling at that moment, it was another boulder that could be moved. It was just one that took the force of water, the gradual but consistent and persistent force of water to push it. And that's kind of how I approach my mindset as I made my way through that race, of just being consistent and persistent in working through that pain and working through that boulder and moving it through. The course was definitely brutal, is a word for it, challenging, difficult, but I was returned to brutal, and it tested me. As I said, I played it smart though, and I had an absolute wonderful time. Like I said, by the time I got to that finish line, I ran across that finish line into, the arms of my sister and my mom and my dad. They all came up to Santa Barbara to hang out with me and see me do the race. And I was ecstatic. It wasn't that I couldn't believe I did the race. I was confident that I was going to be able to do it when I stepped up to that start line. It was more that I was just so overjoyed and grateful that I did do it, because it meant so much for me. But like I said, even with that whole idea of mindset, even in the very few last 10 minutes before the start of the race, I had to kind of readjust my mindset, because the race director, a good friend of mine, Luis Escobar, he was telling all of the racers at the kind of the pre-race meeting about some news that had been, he had just found out about, that a part of the race had been vandalized, that the course markers had been torn down by some people, and that he had some people out there from the race trying to fix it and put the course markers back up. That there were some complaints that were issued from the residents in the area, that they felt kind of insulted that, after fires and after their neighbors had died in these fires and storms that have wrecked their properties and the lands there, they felt kind of insulted that a running race was going to be held in the land that surrounds where they live. Luis was telling us, to be very aware and very cautious. And like, there was a section of the race where you run on a road for about a mile and a half on Gibraltar Road. And he was telling us, follow all the rules, run on the right side of the road. Don't engage with anybody if they try to, provoke you or film you or anything like that. Just keep going and be cautious. And he was saying, because if somebody does feel provoked, or if somebody does feel insulted, one of the residents, they could call the sheriff, and the sheriff could, pull the permit for the race. So even going into the race at that start line, I was like, I might get lost out here because of the course marking problems. Somebody might, issue a complaint and the permit might be pulled on this race altogether. I might not even be able to finish this race, not because I couldn't finish it physically or mentally, but because things were out of my control. But that actually helped me going into the race, readjust my mindset yet again for the better, in saying that, even the physical and mental things, aspect of it is largely out of my control. The only thing that I can control is being here right now in this moment. And that's how I approached every step and tried to do my best to approach every step, is to be present. And whether the permit was pulled or I got lost or I felt too much pain and I wanted to quit, or I got too tired and I wanted to quit, or whatever would happen later on in the race, that was not important at that moment. At whatever moment it was, the moment was what was important. And that's really what I learned to teach myself and to tell myself as I progressed along. And that's what ultimately brought me to that finish line where I could, you know, hug my mom and hug my dad and hug my sister and thank them for coming out and see their excitement on their faces, which I'm sure reflected the excitement on mine of what I just accomplished, something that definitely meant a lot to me. It was the first race that I had done in a long time. The first race since the Born to Run 30 miler last May. And it was definitely the hardest race that I've done since the Bryce Canyon 100 in June of 2017. So just in terms of like my ultra running career or experience or whatever you want to call it, it held a lot for me. But it even held more in terms of the emotional, the mental side of things, the journey, if you will. I spent all of this year since the new year really with a dialed and focused training, even through all the rain that we've gotten here in SLO. It ended up being that my training largely consisted of running on the road, actually here in SLO during the week as it rained, as it typically rained during the week. And then on the weekends when it wasn't raining or wasn't raining as much, running, if I could, you know, on the trails or on a local favorite here of mine, Bishop Peak, which is a extremely solid climb. It's about 2 miles with about 1,200 feet of gain. And, you know, you go up and down. That's a 4 mile, you know, lap. And then you can do that lap as many times as you want. Typically, I'll do it, you know, two or three times for an 8 or 12 mile solid effort. And that is that kind of it was how my winter developed, of training hard, focused on what was coming, 9 trails. And doing my best to prepare myself and my body for being successful and doing well at this race. And again, not doing well in terms of placing or time or beating other people or anything like that. Just doing well in the sense of being physically fit enough to be confident out there and to know and to step up to that start line with confidence that I could finish this race and to have fun out there, to not have it all be suffering or have it be overshadowed by regret that I didn't train enough or anything like that, to just step up there and know that my body and my mind were well equipped with what I had put in and that I could just go out there and have some fun. And that is exactly what happened that day, which I'm glad for. About a week before my birthday this year, before I turned 20, my birthday is on March 1st, so at the end of February, I did the biggest training run that I had done since training for the Bryce Canyon 100. I did a 19-miler with about 4,500 feet of elevation gain, and that run, in line with 9 trails, with the emotion I felt after 9 trails, it signified a lot for me. It signified, honestly, that I could still run that far and that hard. Like I said, it was the first big, true, honest training run that I had done at my time here in college since in high school with training for the Bryce Canyon 100. It taught me or showed me, I guess, let me know that I was still tough, that I could still do it. I've ran a lot here in college, definitely. Run every day up here in college. But I hadn't entered that pain cave in the way that I did on that run. I hadn't entered that pain cave in the way that I used to back in high school with confidence, with the fact that, yeah, this hurts, but I am fit enough to pull out of it, or not even to pull out of it, to keep going through it, learn from it, and to come out the other side stronger. And I would I used to have, you know, that confidence in high school and would use it to bring myself through various races or other adventures. But here in college, I do think it's because of all the new experiences and responsibilities that you have as an independent adult, especially here in college, I kind of lost that confidence, lost that, in my mind, ability to run that way and run that far, to enter that pain cave but come out the other side stronger and better for it. I didn't really know the Pink Cave anymore here in college. And I think that's because of the emotional roller coaster that I went on, you know, with leaving my hometown and my family and establishing, you know, my own life here in San Luis Obispo. With the mental roller coaster of just all of the various trials and tribulations that have happened here in school. And like I said, just with the life roller coaster of being independent and learning to be truly independent. And all of those things, I think, combine to just put running kind of in the back seat. And it's not something that I would say, like, I wish I could go back and change, because that's kind of just how the cards played out. But it just took the, you know, until this quarter, until this winter, for me to come back to it again, truly. To come back to it again in a way that I can appreciate and deeply love in a way that I had, you know, in the lead up to the Bryce 100. For a while, I often felt, for most of my time up here in college in relation to running, like I said, I often felt that I had lost that anchor of the fitness of being able to run far and hard with confidence. But doing that 19 miler was very emotional for me because it signified to me that I could still do it. And then not only could I still do it, but that I could still learn from it, that I could still do it well, and that I could still deeply, deeply enjoy it, and that there was still more that I wanted to do. There was still more that I could push myself. There was still another step that I could take, that I could still get better with my running and with life in general. It told me that I had come back, that I had found it again, that I was back in a lot of senses, that I had running. Real running, the way that I love it, the way that I have wanted it here in college for a long time, that I had it again. And seeing as how, you know, especially with that 19 miler, I wouldn't be a teen anymore in a week, it was also very emotional for me because, you know, I've spent all of my running career as a teenager, I had. And so with a week left, being able to do that 19 miler, being able to teach myself those things, being able to show myself those things, being able to acknowledge myself those things that I could still do it, that I was still there, that there were still steps to take. It kind of was a metaphor for going into my 20s, that there's still ways to improve, that there's still steps to take, that I could still do what I do, but I can do it even better. And that's really kind of what I learned from that 19 miler. And in general, that's what I learned from Nine Trails. Nine Trails itself had much of the same emotional roller coaster attached to it for me. Crossing that finish line really put kind of a cap on a lot of the various ups and downs and struggles, mental and physical, that I have undergone here in college, at my time in college, and kind of summarized them, encapsulated them, and kind of pushed them forward in my mind for me to be able to truly process them, accept them, acknowledge them, and learn from them, move forward. It showed me, in terms of running, that it was still a thing I could do, as hard as that race was, that I could do it well, and that I still loved it, and that I could still learn from it. And it showed me that I was somebody who may, you know, step away from something for a while, and it's not that I stepped away from running per se from my own volition. It was something that kind of just happened, and it was not that I stopped running. I still ran, but like I've been saying, running in the way of being able to enter that pain cave and but come out the other side stronger for it, that I could step away from kind of running in that state. And it might take a while, it might take a year and a half, as it did, more even. But then eventually, with presence and with patience and with confidence, building that confidence slowly, I can come back to it and I can build it again. And I can hopefully, this time, keep it. But if I step away from it again or from something else in life, I just have to exercise that confidence, that patience, that presence again, and know that, you know, what I have in the moment, in the present moment, is what counts. And what I want to have in future present moments, I can work towards, but I still need to be present, always. So, if you're curious about what I do with Touching the Trail, if you want to find out more about Touching the Trail, if you want more stuff, from Touching the Trail, please go to touchingthetrail.com. You can read the writings. You can utilize the resources on food and meditation and readings. And you can sign up for the Touching the Trail Weekly, the newsletter that I send out every Friday, filled with a weekly book recommendation, a challenge to help better yourself, and a spiritual quote breakdown. If you sign up, you will get a free downloadable vegan recipe ebook. And as always, if you ever have any questions or comments, or if you just want to talk, feel free to reach out to me via the contact page on the website. You can follow us on social media at Touching the Trail on Instagram, at Touch the Trail on Twitter, and the Touching the Trail page on Facebook. If you haven't done so already, please remember to subscribe to the show, and also remember to share the show out with your friends and your family and your coworkers and anybody else who wants to better themselves. If you're enjoying or loving the show every week, please leave a review. It lets me know that you're out there and that you're listening and that you're loving and enjoying what I do every week. If you want to help support Touching the Trail, you can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. And as I have said many, many times before, this show is built and based in the Buddhist concept of dana, of generosity, of giving. And so I cannot continue to improve and build on this tribe, especially as a college student, without your help. So please, again, that was touchingthetrail.com/donate for however much you feel motivated to donate. You can also go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. Now, these are functional, affordable, unique, and handmade handheld deep tissue massage tools. And all of those links are in the show notes as usual. Now, going forward this week, I want you to remember the mantra that I employed at Nine Trails. Take it slow and take it steady. And as always, remember to go far, go further, and I will see you all next week on the Touching the Trail podcast. The Touching the Trail podcast.